listening and welcome to Building Bridges, your community and labor report. I'm Amy Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash.
We are the many highlights from the Million Worker March. The Million Worker March in Washington, D.C. was a step in forging a social, economic, and political movement for working people. 36 years ago, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. summoned people across the country to a Poor People's March on Washington to inaugurate a war on poverty at home. The U.S. government, he proclaimed, is one of the greatest purveyors of violence in the world. America is at a crossroads in history, and it is critically important for us to choose a new path and move on with resolution and courage. MLK's words were the truth then and a prophetic harbinger of the crisis faced today by the unemployed and workers. The Million Worker March sought to mobilize working people to propagate their own agenda and confront the power of the privileged few.
So we're going to move on to some selections from the Million Worker March, starting appropriately with a selection from Martin Luther King III, talking about the connection between civil rights and labor rights.
I first thank God for the opportunity to be here on this historic occasion and to have the pleasure of traveling with Dick Gregory, who kind of helped to give me a lot of inspiration and a lot of us throughout this nation and world, and also with Reverend E. Randall T. Osborne, who has worked with me over the years at SCLC and was one of the youngest workers, if not the youngest, who worked with my father at SCLC. And so it's a special honor to be with them today. As I stand here where my father stood 41 years ago and delivered his vision for our nation, a vision which talked about making America a greater nation. And while we've not totally achieved all of that vision, we certainly have made great strides, but God knows we still have a long way to go. I first want to thank Reverend Ralph Shulman for keeping that vision alive and by coordinating with a number of others this great march. I want to give special thanks to Local 10 of the International Longshoremen Workers Union, who saw that vision in 1967 and who made Martin Luther King Jr. an honorary member. For that, I thank you, ILWU Local 10. In fact, my father in 1967 talked about the tactics that labor used, often that he and others had applied in the movement to bring about social change in our nation. In 1967, he called for the mobilization of the Poor People's Campaign. And in 1968, he was to have come to Resurrection City, it was called. Some called it Tent City. He tragically did not live to see that come to fruition. But it was to bring together workers, poor blacks, poor whites, poor Native Americans, poor Americans from all walks of life, to say to our nation's policymakers, we demand the right to decent jobs with decent pay. That was over 36 years ago. It's very sad that today we find ourselves still trying to say we demand the right to decent jobs with decent pay. Some may ask, how long will it be? And we may have to say, well, we don't know how long, but we do know that the moral arc of the universe is long and bends towards justice. Some may still ask, well, how long? We may not be able to say exactly how long, but we know that no lie can last forever. Some may ask, how long? And we still have to say, we don't know exactly how long, but we do know that God Almighty is still on the throne. And so we can never give up hope. You see, because as we stand here today with 36 million people who are living at the level of poverty in this country. With over 45 million people with no health insurance. There's something wrong in America, and that must be fixed. And the only way that it's going to be fixed is for labor and the civil rights movement and working people and all of us to come together, because united we will stand, divided we've always failed. But you know, I have hope because I know that unity, a spirit of unity, is in the air. My father used to tell us that a voteless people is a powerless people. And one of the most important steps that we can take is that short step to the ballot box. And so in just a few days, we must go to the, not just to the poll, we must go to the election booths and vote like we've never voted before. If those of us who are here today, when we left and went back to our destinations, just got on the phone and called 20 of our friends, just called 20 of our friends and encouraged them to vote and encouraged them to call 20 and encouraged them to call 20, then on election day, we will elect the people that need to serve us, not the wrong people. Not people who will continue to foster wars that we'll never win, because war is not the answer. We've lost over 1,000 in Iraq. We need to be focused on helping our Haitian brothers and sisters, some who are being slaughtered by each other, tragically, because of circumstances, some who've been slaughtered because of natural disasters. We need to be helping our brothers and sisters in the Sudan, because you see, we can provide assistance when we want to. But you can't do that when you're spending over billions. You spent $180 billion, almost $200 billion in Iraq for death and destruction. It would just seem that we as Americans would demand, if you're going to spend that kind of money for death and destruction, you ought to at least spend an equal amount for life and the preservation of life. Today you will hear a number of speakers, and as I prepare to close, I do believe that if my father were in our midst, he would tell us to keep on keeping on. Because it only takes a few good women and men to bring about change. It's not always the masses. While we want to garner the masses, it's not just the masses. It's just a few good women and men that brought about change in the 60s, that raised the moral consciousness of this nation and brought about change. And it's going to take a few good women and men in the halls of Congress, a few good women and men at the state government level, a few good women and men at the city government levels, a few good women and men at the county government levels, a few good women and men who are social activists and neighborhood leaders to bring about the changes that we seek. When we do that, then it won't be as important who's in the White House. It's important today who's in the White House, but it won't be as important, because we as a collective body will be making change. And so I say to you, my brothers and sisters, do not get any ways tired. It's very easy to become despaired and just give up, but do not get any ways tired. Why? Because we've come much too far than where we started. No one ever told any of us that our roads would be easy. But I'm here to tell you, I know our God. Our God didn't bring any of us this far to leave us. Thank you, and God bless you.
Special privilege for me, brothers and sisters. This is the salt of the earth. Brother Frank Romero, organizational director of the American Postal Workers Union, who has been there for us every minute of every day, mobilizing the buses, mobilizing the chapters, 1,350 chapters of the American Postal Workers Union. Brother Frank Romero.
Let's hear it for the American Postal Workers Union. We are here with you, postal workers from all over the country. We are also on the front line of this terrorist movement. We are standing strong. We are delivering mail for the American public day and night. We have lost two postal workers here in this city of Washington, D.C. to the anthrax attacks. We are here also in force to thank you, the American public, for being there against White House Postal Commission. They were trying to close post offices in rural and urban locations, consolidate postal facilities, move our work out to the private sector. That way, there would be no communication between the different cities like we are used to. Universal mail service. Postal workers are here with you today, and we are here in support of this great movement. I also stand here as a member of the Labor Council, Latin American Advancement. Viva los trabajadores! Viva los trabajadores postales! Viva the Million Worker March! We thank you! Yay, postal workers!
Sirs, my name is Jack Heyman. I'm from ILWU Local 10. I was here in Washington some 40 years ago for the Civil Rights March on Washington. And the powers that be at that time, the Dixiecrat Democrats and the Republicans, tried to stop that march. And just as they were unable to stop that march, they're not going to be able to stop us today. Whenever workers marched on Washington, the government has used repression. After World War I, when miners from Tennessee and Kentucky attempted a march on Washington from the coal fields, they bombed them with airplanes. Hundreds were killed. Right before the Great Depression, the Veterans Bonus March, which was working class people who were out of work, were attacked by troops under the command of General MacArthur. This is the kind of treatment that workers have when they protest in Washington. Brothers and sisters, right now, workers across the country are fighting for their health care rights. Hotel workers in San Francisco, Washington, and Los Angeles are out on strike and they're locked out, and we need to support them. Health care is a right, but it's a right in this country that we have to fight for, and we need a party, a fighting workers' party, to represent us, because the Democrats and Republicans, as Momia said, never will represent us. We knew that a couple years ago in the ILWU, when we were into our contract negotiations, the government threatened to send troops to the docks to occupy the docks. And then, at the request of Democrat Dianne Feinstein, they invoked Taft-Hartley against us. That's why we need to repeal Taft-Hartley, because it's a slave labor bill against the working class. It shackles us whenever we go into struggle. Another important struggle recently that came before workers in this country, it became a cause celeb, was the Charleston Longshoremen. The Charleston Longshoremen marched on the state capitol in the year 2000, along with 40,000 others, to demand they take down the Confederate flag of slavery. The following day, the brothers from the Charleston Longshore Local demonstrated in their own port against a scab operation. And what did the Democratic governor of South Carolina do? He sent in riot police to attack the picketers. Five brothers were arrested and scores were injured by the police attack. That struggle ended in victory, to a great part because of the militancy and the leadership of ILA Local 1422. Brothers and sisters, our next speaker, the leader of that struggle, Brother Ken Riley. Let's give it up.
Brothers and sisters, it's great to be here today in solidarity with our brothers from the West Coast and with workers all over this country. We come with a message from the South. Jack just got through explaining to you the kind of vicious attack that was launched against workers in South Carolina. And if this present administration stays in office 4 more years, we will witness several more attacks on workers all over this country. That's why on November 2nd, to re-elect Bush is not an option. Bush must go. We must send him back to Texas now. If workers are going to have a chance to reunite, to build the kind of labor party that we need in this country, we cannot do it under this present administration. They know that's what we want to do. Therefore, the attacks will continue to come. We must fight for those who cannot fight for themselves. We must defend everything that we have fought for over the years. Good health care for our workers through the union movement. Good, decent pay for our workers. We must continue this fight and never let up. Never let this administration go forward and crush the will of the working people. So they have taken the South for granted. They think that the South belongs to the Republicans. Well, we are a living example that that's not true. And we're going to show them. South Carolina has been written off. We are not even considered a battleground state. They will be surprised come November 2nd to see how we have mobilized in South Carolina. We will send the message that we know what this administration is about, and we in the South, more so than anyone, cannot afford to allow this Bush administration to continue to exist. Therefore, we ask you to join us in ousting this president and sending him back to Texas where he belongs, on his ranch. Maybe he can govern the cattle better than he can govern this country. Thank you. And right now, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to introduce the next speaker, my leader in South Carolina, Donald D. Wood, who leads the South Carolina AFL-CIO, the hardest working woman in show business, the lady who knows how to get it done, the lady who can cover from the foothills of South Carolina to the coast in one day. Welcome, Donald D. Wood.
Are you fired up? Are you fired up, South Carolina?
Yeah.
Are you fired up, North Carolina?
Yeah.
Are you fired up, Virginia?
Yeah.
Are you fired up? We're in the South. Are you fired up?
Yeah.
Yes, we are. And we've traveled to stand in solidarity with workers from around the nation and around the world. And I'm joined today by South Carolina Vice Presidents Ken Riley and Jesse Weaver, by Executive Board members Charles Brave and Helen Washington, by our trustee Sarah Lloyd, and other union members of the South Carolina AFL-CIO. And we want to thank the ILWU, and we want to thank all of the people on the Million Worker March Committee for making this possible. I especially want to thank President Ken Riley and ILA 1422 and 1422A, who made it possible for all of these members to attend today. Now, I want to say about today, you've heard about the Charleston Five, and it's because so many of you came to stand with us to send a clear message, free the Charleston Five. And today, they're free men because we stood together. So today, we're going to pay tribute to all of the retired workers who've been the cornerstone of our nation, to our working veterans who served our nation, and to working Americans from the classroom to the workplace. You are keeping the American dream alive. We bring a message of hope to all working America today. But we bring a message too to those whose greed who would smother the flames of the American dream. We will not allow weapons of fear to replace the flickering flames that burn in the torch of a free working America. We represent the everlasting dream of the opportunity humanity that made America a great nation. We do not represent a nation of workers for sale to the lowest bidder. Our message today is clear. This land is our land. We built it. We made it a land of opportunity for all people, not a privileged few. We will fan the flames of freedom on November the 2nd, 2004, and we will vote for the American dream. Thank you.
Brothers and sisters, we have a soul sister who has been in this struggle from day one. We have the first line of the fighters for the life of Brother Mumia Abu Jamal. We have our sister Pam Africa with us, and we're honored to have her here.
On the move. My name is Pam Africa. I'm a disciple of John Africa, and it is my pleasure to be the head of the International Concerned Family and Friends of Mumia Abu Jamal. And I stand here with my brothers and sisters who have been on the front line of workers for Mumia, who have been on the front line to keep Mumia alive so that he can continue be one of the workers that is known around the world and all for workers' rights. It is our honor to introduce a tape from Mumia Abu Jamal, live from death row, with a message for millions of workers for Mumia.
All right.
As soon as the tape is finished, let's say free Mumia now.
Okay.
Free Mumia now. When the tape, when he's finished speaking.
The Million Worker March, the war against workers. Almost all of us, from wherever we've come, have something vital in common. We're engaged in the world of work. Some of us are members of unions, as am I, a proud, card-carrying member of the National Writers Union, which is affiliated with the United Auto Workers. Some of us, perhaps the majority, are not members of a union, and yet as so-called contingency workers, as temps, as part-timers, as on-call workers, as workfare, as day laborers, as permit temps, as immigrant workers, caregiving workers, invisible workers, housewives. And last but not least, as prison laborers, we're people who are workers who add to social good, and all of us are catching hell. That's because wherever there is a war against wages, that means a war against workers. If we speak the truth, it doesn't matter who wins the White House, workers are catching hell. That's because the only choices before the American people are corporate choices, a thin, narrow slice between two quite similar brokerage parties who sell their souls to the highest bidder. Think of it this way. The last president supported by vast labor votes was William Jefferson Clinton. And how did Clinton reward labor support? By passing NAFTA and opening the door to the globalist monster that is sucking the lifeblood from most working families across the nation. The drastic loss of U.S. manufacturing jobs and resultant drop in wages can be traced to the NAFTA bill. That's why a million worker march is so necessary, to break through the corporate gibble-gobble that now dominates the coming elections. Corporate candidates covered by corporate media for corporate interests is no wonder so slimy. It's also no wonder that the word workers rarely, if ever, crosses the lips of the corporate candidates. It's no wonder that the word union sounds like profanity when they mention it. It is only workers that can or will defend the interests of workers, like universal health care for all people, a national living wage and livable retirement benefits, to bring democracy to the shop floor so that decisions about work are made by those who labor, like taxation that is progressive on corporations and the wealthy and relieves the burdens on the working class and the poor, like an end to wars waged for corporate America, like Iraq, like the immediate revocation of all anti-labor pacts like NAFTA, FTAA, the WTO, and CAFTA, the repeal of Taft-Hartley, and the repeal of the so-called Patriot Act. These are but some of the demands motivating the Million Worker March, but it can't be all of them. Workers actually build this society, It is they, and only they, who can rebuild it. This means a resurgence of the labor movement that is truly revolutionary, that does not settle for its slice, but changes the social order completely. Or else, we will be choosing the same old monkeys to sit over us as they betrayed us forever. That time must end. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are produced by Noel Hanrahan for Prison Radio.
Free Mumia now! Free Mumia now!
Free Mumia now!
Free Mumia now!
Free Mumia now!
On the move!
And those were highlights of the Million Worker March in front of the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C. I'd like to thank you for listening. This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report. And if you'd like to get in touch with Building Bridges, you can write Mimi, that's M-I-M-I, at buildingbridgesonline.org. Ken and I would love to hear from you. Have a good evening.
My people are rising. 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 People are rising up. Can't beat them down, chill them down, so without igniting the righteous passion to turn the power out. What the Constitution guarantees, freedom of assembly and the freedom of speech.